This is the poem from the Library of Congress. I am Grace Cavalieri. Mark Vincennes is here. He is a poet, a fiction writer, translator, editor, musician. He is a publisher, an editor. He is everything an artist can be. But right now we're going to hear a poem. This is Mark.
Thank you, Grace. Karma. How the birds have stopped singing. How the green has become gray. How your last words resonate. This is the very thing you are. A short note from the heart. I could still hear his laughs from where, while reading at the kitchen lamp, the night was windowless and the words split apart as the housefly drilled into the cracks. But there was grace here and its silent voluptuousness bearing down upon my breast like an ocean, ignorant, old, and preserving. And hunched, I walked the narrow passage into the dreams of my dreams, afraid of what it meant to be orphaned, to be departed, or the money spent on acquiring identity and the light that louvers in the I do, in the shuffling of thought between the latter and the former, and the fate of family or the smell of consequence in all its sizes, flooded in impartial stares. How the near-sighted cloud in the pane has little fear of the unknown, and the illusion of will in the small, gentle order recalls the belligerent, the delinquent, the crushed genes of atomic time, where such small quarry was the pastime of lesser gods, of forest spirits or water fry, where the sky forks away, and we were reborn again every second Sunday among the birds.
Your poetry enters the body, and that is not something that is easily said. That is a poem which displays your lyricism. You have many voices, and that is among the most lyrical of your poems, I think. And the imagery is so dreamlike. Did you write that in a trance?
I would say probably yes. The poem comes from the book, The Pearl Diver of Iromani.
Oh, that's your new book.
That came out last year with White Pine. It was my therapy getting through several health crises in particular. The first one where I went into a thyroid storm and had heart failure, which has now since entirely recovered after they realized it was my thyroid and not my heart.
I understand.
But I spent, many days in the hospital and reading actually quite a lot of ancient Chinese poetry and of course, reflecting on the afterlife and the life now.
Well, I know you've written a novel about the Chinese culture, but that is so transcendent. It came from a place that cannot be manufactured. And mostly I've known all of your past work as so new. And my question, I've always wanted to pin you down with the question, why? What is in you that has to break old forms and make new forms? What impels you to stand on top of the 100-foot wave and surf until you get something totally new? Why does everything have to be made for the first time, although you use ancient methods? Why do you have to be new, Mark?
It's a very good question. I mean, we know, of course, the whole poetry dictum of make it new. What was it, Ezra Pound who said that, I believe?
He did. But you take it to a degree. I mean, you took it seriously. Your work is astonishing.
It's the same with my music as well. I really try to stretch the boundaries of what is possible. I think probably because I need the challenge. And I'm always hoping, at least with poetry, to get a little deeper and closer to the language than I thought was possible, you know?
Well, we're going to talk about how you get close to language after your next poem. And people should know that you won the Massachusetts Book Award for translating literature. Let's hear a poem.
I'm sorry. Was I going to read from the Mayfly Codex?
It does not. We want anything you've got.
Okay.
Anything you've got. Just tell us what it's coming from so that people can go out and buy it.
Let me see. Well,
the Mayfly's a new one.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Mayfly Codex.
And this is from another book that came out earlier this year with the Lavender Ink from New Orleans. and it's called The King of Prussia is Drunk on Stars. And this poem is called Spectral Analysis, and it's a prose poem. Down at the port where the ribbons flow on a Friday night, the pubs are crowded at 5. The old skippers congregate, drifting greedily into their odd banter. Who caught the most frightening fish? Who came face to face with the deep in the eye at a giant squid? Or barely escaped that battering from an angry blue whale? Imagine what else they go on about. Long time coming storm cloud on the horizon, beneath the weather, then above it. Here come the mackerel, the herring, the scores of transatlantic cod. Once this place was loaded with sardines in wooden barrels and sailed from here across the world, the fish could be scooped up by almost any hand. They came from as far as Siberia, followed by all the seagulls and 100 years of frostbite. Take this very can, over 100 years old, dented and rusted, the metal seep in, but the oil, imported from the Cretan islands, is still a thick emulsion, and when you bite in, the salt crystals crackle on your tongue, and the sardines are soft yet firm, their skins having quietly braised in history, touched by cosmic background radiation. All's well with you, you say. I would hand you some fragments, some cold evidence, how they were herded onto the boats, searing in pain from cable burns, or those who died with a wire across their eyes, the cut and scrape of their gills against cold steel, how they came from the other side of the planet to mate and spawn and breed, where the most vital and vibrant river finds its source.
You know, I could read a poem and know you had written it. And that is the highest compliment I can give, because some poems anyone could have written, but there is something about you which is inimitable, because you use the ancient world, the present world, futurism, the natural world, history, sometimes all in the same poem. And we know no one else who's doing that. And there's not a flaw in the poem. So how can you, what do you have to say for yourself?
Well, obviously that's all fantastic praise, and especially coming from you, Grace, because I know you've read and interviewed many, many, many poets. So let me just...
Are you happy with what you do, Mark? Are you happy when you're doing it? Are you happy when you're doing it? I heard Bob Hickok last night, and he said he's only, you know, true when he's writing the poem.
I'm very happy. It's a world that I continuously want to explore. And, you know, both linguistically and also thematically, narratively and non-narratively as well. I'm an appreciator of all kinds of poetry, from, you know, the wildest language poetry to erasure to, of course, you know, rhyming couplets. I've actually been thinking I need to go back to doing a little bit more rhyme, but...
Oh, really? That will be interesting. Well, yes.
let's see how we go with that one. I'm actually working on so many projects now.
I believe it. You need to be cloned. But what I like, well, first of all, you are also a translator. I think that has a lot to do with your sensibilities. And I know you've translated from German, Romanian, and French, and I think 10 books of translation. And there's something about those layers that live in you that seem to seep through your English poetry. But I'm not going to hold you up because we want to hear more. Mark Vincennes on The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress.
Thank you, Grace. This is in a forthcoming book, to be titled No More Animal Poems. And it's forthcoming with White Pine next year. The year after next. It's a long book. It's about 250 pages. And it includes a long series of notes and mini essays on each of the poems as well. In many cases, also even hinting at how they were formed. The beginning of the book starts with a poem called Planet of the Apes. And the book is dedicated to the great ape Ham, who was the first ape to be shot out into space. After years of training, Ham was shot out into space. He soared in a fabricated capsule of dubious design and pushed and pulled levers and buttons to avoid being electroshocked. He reached the stratosphere at 5,000 miles per hour and looked down upon the world from a window in his capsule where, despite the jungle spinning in his head, he remembered to pull lever number 45. Down his craft tumbled, through the noisy stars, down through the even noisier clouds, through an acid rainstorm, into a quiet, quiet, forbidding landscape. At the ceremony, the sooty emissary presented Ham what appeared to be a shiny red apple. As the dust wafted, then settled again, Ham bit into the sweet pulpy flesh, grateful that these kind apes had a vision for the future.
Whoa, we can't wait for poems that tell how they were processed a little bit. That is something else, because maybe you don't know until you're going to say it. That's what I want to ask you about. First of all, I think your poetry is clear. To me, it is clear. And yet you have said that ambiguity is extremely important for art. And why is ambiguity necessary for art?
That's a very good question. I think because it allows each reader or listener to formulate some of their own ideas and opinions, just as if you look at cubist art or more abstract forms, that, you know, it is in the eye of the beholder what that represents to them, you know.
But is it necessary? I mean, can you have clear art that is worth having and transparent art? Is it necessary or just good?
I think you can have ultra-realist art that is that sounds beautiful, that looks beautiful. But I think a little bit of dissonance and a little bit of ambiguity always gives it a more soulful entrance somehow. It allows the spirit a little bit to seep in.
There we got it. That spirit, that elusive spirit that makes all the difference. Are you a chef as well as a poet?
A cook, do you mean? Or
a cook? No, I mean a high-level cook, a chef.
I'm pretty good.
Thought so. It's the way you talk about adding a little pepper here to the stew. But I have always thought that Mark Vincennes could take any two fragments and put them together and make sense. But then I think, no, it depends on the fragments. But am I on to something about you? I mean, can't you do anything with give you a bunch of words, and can't you just put them together in some way that other people don't have? Do you think that about yourself?
I try not to.
Oh, okay. That's better. That's best. That is really best.
Try not to. Of course, sometimes one has moments of self-doubt. And of course, everyone needs some kind of reinforcement.
Do you get enough?
My wife would say I'm complaining about it all the time, actually.
That's some poetry, Mark Vincennes. Thank God for your wife.
Thank God for her, yeah.
And your dog, your daughter dog.
Absolutely. I've got two dogs now, actually.
Oh, so much affirmation.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of experience, true, pure love, the two dogs are really very expressive. And I've always believed that there are bonds that are capable through interaction with other species. I was just hearing about an explorer in the Brazilian jungle who became friendly with a bunch of giant river otters. And one of them actually went to get him from his camp to take him down to the river because he wanted to show him something. So he followed the otter down to the river, and there in the river were 20 river otters jumping up and down on the back of a giant caiman, just taunting it. And the caiman was having at it, you know. So the otters were sort of saying to the chap, look what we did. We can actually, you know, jump over this scary monster and he can't catch us, you know.
Well, your work is filled with animal spirit. You get right into the soul of animals and turn a light on it. So I think there's a true soul connection with you in the animal world. It comes out. Let's have more poetry from Mark Vincennes.
Thank you, Grace. And this one is also from No More Animal Poems. It's called This Bee Beside Me. Her Majesty, Her Royal Highness, and all the actors in their co-starring roles. The hard work of others might be this. You can listen to their fairy tales. You can dig yourself into an ancient crypt, all those piled bones and the goblets of tiny skulls. Once in a frenzy, the dance ensues. You can't help yourself but go with the general gaiety. A new strain of this has to be found, a new hybrid, a lighter strain, sweeter, tongue-defying, effervescence bold, and carrying the fragrance of the watery worlds of lilacs and lilies and lapwing ducks. The queen enters her chambers, dragging her long wings. Naturally, says she, in all her chintz and finery. She turns to the choir, and the baroque quartet taps her staff on an acorn. My beloved ones, on with the encore.
You know, sonics is very important to you. And I want to hear a little bit about that. With your poetry and with your music, the percussion, the consonants are important for you to convey what cannot be said in language. What is it with you in sonics?
Well, for one, I suppose my poetic drive really began with my love of music. And the first instrument I played was the drums.
Oh, now I understand. To get to the heart, right?
Exactly. Like Clark Coolidge, for example, plays the drums, yeah?
And do you still play the drums?
Not very well. But thankfully, in the studio, there are all sorts of ways to make them sound better.
Oh, so you do record in the studio?
I have my own little home studio, but I'm actually about to go and record an album in a quote-unquote real studio run by an old friend of mine. Pete Katus, who was always one of the producers of the band The National, actually won a Grammy for it.
Whoa, not bad.
I was very happy that he agreed to do my album.
He probably is honored to do it. I know people do not know maybe that you were born in Hong Kong and raised in Switzerland, and you have traveled the world, Brazil, Spain, you've worked in China, Iceland, India, and you still, I think, travel the world. And so I'm thinking that you came to America with a tone that you couldn't have otherwise if you had born an American poet, that you came in with some vapors from all this other life, these other lives. Don't you think that you are other than because you brought with you other countries, that you aren't really just apple pie American?
I'm certainly not apple pie American.
No, thank you. Thank you for that.
But yeah, all of those cultures obviously have influenced me, and especially in my, shall we say, seminal years when I was an adolescent, the years that I spent in a Swiss monastery boarding school.
Oh my.
Up in the mountains at the age of 11, was sent there one season early to study German because my German at that stage was non-existent. You see, my mother was English and we spoke English at home. And so my father just basically wanted to give me shock treatment. So I sat for 6 months with Father Sigispert, memorizing Goethe's Faust, having no real German. And I guess that was part of my initiation into poetry as well on some level.
Well, I think you could have wound up in prison or a genius. And guess what you've chosen? Why were you born in Hong Kong?
My father was a businessman, and he was doing business with China in the very early days, when it was still, well, very communist. In fact, he told me, and I'm not really sure if this is true, because there is some myth and lore both about my father and my grandfather having been in MI5, but whether all of this is true or not is hard to tell. Now, my father was invited to Deng Xiaoping's funeral, and he was one of very few Westerners who were invited to that, especially outside the political circles. And after that, he set up an office in New York City, actually in the Twin Towers. He was regularly visited by the CIA, who were constantly asking him if he was a member of the Communist Party. And of course, he always denied it. I don't think he was, personally.
Well, a businessman, a capitalist, would not be.
Absolutely. But the CIA weren't sure, let's put it that way.
Well, of course, they never are. But did you love him?
Did I love my father? Yes, I did. A lot of strange occurrences with him. I mean, I worked with him for a while. That ended up being a complete disaster. We argued on a daily basis. We didn't really see eye to eye. He was not artistic in any measure at all. In fact, he could barely dance to a rhythm or tap his foot.
Then your mother, the DNA is your mother then.
I believe more my mother's side, well, it must be from my mother's side. My grandfather was an architect, a land surveyor. And a map maker, cartographer was the word I wanted to use. And he was also very good at drawing and that sort of thing. But other than that, no musical influence, really, no...
Amazing.
No musician.
Maybe you just came from a star planet.
My mother always said she thought I was an alien.
No, just directly from the... Just made of stardust. And no other excuse for it. Let's have another poem. Mark Vincent, who's now in Western Massachusetts, very far from Hong Kong.
That's right. This is another poem from No More Animal Poems. And it's a prose poem. And it's called Daddy's Shrunken Heads. Daddy's shrunken heads lay right there next to his pipe rack and reminded me of those plastic trolls whose hair you could braid like a Viking's. But they all had these grimaces, clenched eyes, as if they had lost their heads in the last act of pleasure or pain. Hard to tell. The lines get blurry there. Later, Mummy hid them, those telling three heads that stared at the world from inside a coconut. Daddy advised me they were three of his ex-business partners. One from Russia, one Brazil, the third, a little fella who grew up on the wrong side of the tracks, somewhere in Islington in North London. I would stare longingly into their distant parts. I knew the Russian hailed from Stalingrad and had once been a window cleaner, and the Brazilian was half Swedish, and prior to being a business fellow, had dabbled in the arcane arts, a lover of the Ouija and the tarot card, it was said. The Englishman was a man of letters. By the shape of his nose, I could tell he had been a fine poet. In fact, the last four lines from his very last poem popped into my head from time to time. Stop the presses, roll out the stresses, let me be the squirrel to your acorn. Inflamed enjambment of caresses, the knees to your bees in a hailstorm. Strangely, between those early days and those of the three heads' demise, the Englishman had become a disreputable chap dealing in exotic insects. The Russian fellow ended up at the ends of the earth on an ocean freighter destined for the turquoise shallows of Borneo, and the Brazilian had been hijacked mid-sea. It was hardly a Titanic moment, more a strafe of irony, that they all landed on what they thought was a deserted beach. And lucky for me, they smelled of cinnamon and vanilla, of toasted garlic and onions, hand-rolled Havanas, and Mummy's chicken salad. That was until Mummy tossed them in the trash chute, along with Daddy's collection of pornography and a purple evil eye that I seem to recall came from the island of Crete. But then again, I may be wrong.
Mark Vincennes, is there no end to creation as long as there's language? I mean, can you go on forever? Transforming, as long as you can transform, can you go on and on?
I hope so. I'd love to. And I think I need to.
That's the word.
And I think even if it weren't language, let's say, for example, I lost my sight or something, I would still work with sounds, you know?
I would still work. And, you know, there's also such a knowledge of craft. I'm harking back to a poem about three readings ago, and you're listing things and it is billowing and moving. And then there is a pivot in the middle, all's well with you, you say, and that turns a corner and the structures stand. The structures are there. They are not going to collapse because they're built on a knowledge of formations. So as much as you take liberties, you always have a solid armature. Am I dreaming or am I right? I think I'm right.
I would hope so. Yeah.
So you think structure is just something you inherited from a cartographer, or do you know the forms of poetry?
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Okay.
Although, I step outside of the form most often, I would say.
Well, I say they're there, but they're embedded so that we are fooled into just pure lyricism. And I like the fact that because you believe in language, that you circulate and promote other people. So talk about Madcap Press and New American Writing. With everything else, you are always making, producing, and distributing other people. How long has Madcap Press been going on?
Mad Hat Press has been...
Oh, did I say Madcap?
You did.
I know it well. Mad Hat Press.
Mad Hat Press has been going, I think it's about 12 years now.
Always under your umbrella? Always you?
Yeah, I was always involved with it from the very beginning. But it was started by myself and another writer, Carol Novak. I don't know if you knew her. She was originally from New York City, but then moved to Asheville, North Carolina. And she ran the Mad Hatter's Review. You probably remember that, that online journal of sort of wild and crazy poetry and fiction. And I was poetry editor there, and she asked me if I'd like to form a press with her, and I said yes. And we started, and she died. In fact, she died very soon after. In fact, she never even got to see the only title that she had commissioned. But I decided to continue on with the press, and we nearly have 200 titles in our catalog now.
In 12 years?
Yeah.
Let us hear a final poem, and then the music at the end of this program will be the music by Mark Vincennes.
This one is called An Uneasy Icelandic Grit, and it comes from a book which I'm still working on called All the Tricks of Language. And there's an epigraph, which is, drink ale by the fire, but slide on the ice. Buy a steed when 'tis lanky, a sword when 'tis rusty. Feed thy horse neath the roof, and thy hound in the yard. And that comes from the poetic Edda from Iceland. Perhaps the sleepless dreamer will hear her own voice this Reykjavik summer, the octaves quavering over their own timbre deep from within Middle Earth. With those eyes, her own fanciful features marking measures in the darkness, that some enchanted creature might one night in the Ordarachen, in those ancient cities of ash and wind, climb those walls of ice, a weathered wonder, with only a basket of seaweed and lichen to bless the gods of frost and snow.
Frost and smoke. The voice, the unforgettable voice of Mark Vincennes. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Rivada Foundation, the Sinipid Fund, and Anne Arundel Council for the Arts. Friends of the program, Natalie Canavor and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin's our engineer, and I'm Grace Cavalieri. Thank you.